Hey, everybody. My name is Mark, and thank you for tuning into this week's Menlo Midweek Podcast. We have Cheryl Fletcher on, as well as Jess will be co-hosting today. So it will be a really fun episode as we're diving further in to the conversation about love that we started this past weekend. So there's a lot of really fun things happening later this month in person, like our Good Friday service and our Easter services at all of our campuses. So you can head over to menlo.church/Easter for that. And it's not too late to join over 4,500 other people in our morning devotionals as we're journeying towards Easter together. So make sure that you check those out. And now let's go ahead and jump into today's podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the Menlo Midweek Podcast. My name is Mark.
My name is Jessica.
And we have Cheryl with us today.
Woo! Glad to be here.
Cheryl, we got to keep the tradition alive.
Yeah.
What's your title?
Oh, man.
Queen of waking up early this morning?
I was up very early this morning. So, yeah, I'll just take that. Okay. I'm the queen of waking up this morning.
Love it. That's so funny.
That's not normally my title.
Is that a daylight savings thing? Or were you just happened to be?
No. Yeah. My mind was spinning.
Oh, I hate that.
I preached, and then there's just the next few weeks have so much going on.
Yeah.
And I got home from preaching and was going to dive into some of that stuff.
Sure.
But instead, I took Queso for a walk because I would have just fallen asleep. And I've learned don't do that. And then I watched the Oscars. So I think, I woke up super early just on my own and then I just went ahead and got out of bed and said, come to the office early because there's just too many things going on. Right. Yeah,
definitely.
So
I also watched the Oscars. Did you have a movie that you were like, yes, I'm so glad it won, or a person or any of that?
I actually thought the show was good.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you're just like,
oh, I know.
Oh, please stop it.
Yes.
With all your stuff, you know?
They did good.
So, I thought Jimmy did great. Yeah. I mean, you know, I would say I didn't love Oppenheimer as much as people did.
Yeah.
Okay. My top three, I saw all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I would say the Zone of Interest about the Nazis, and that felt like such a profound film that in many ways I would say it probably deserved Best Picture in my mind because it was so beautifully written, so beautifully done. The acting is, you know, all of them, their acting, you know, all the shows, the films, the acting was great, but it was just so profound. I wouldn't say it was as entertaining as others.
Yeah.
But my top two were really Anatomy of a Fall and Past Lives.
Okay.
So apparently I really like subtitle movies this year. You know, I will say this was a really, really hard year for me. There was only one of the movies to not be named that I was like, oh gosh, I need to go clean my palate after watching that. And
I think most people can guess if they know.
Yeah,
if they know
if
the
you've
movies.
Watched the movies, but I mean, the creativity, I get all the things. I just felt like there were just, in my mind, it could have been even that particular film could have been deeper, more profound. I think it went cheap on humor and trying to make a point, which it could have made it in a different way.
Yeah.
But that's me, and we're not here to talk about film, but
I asked, because
I do love film. I love it. I love that stuff. I love the Oscars. I love all the things.
Yeah.
I usually watch all the documentaries, didn't watch a single one, so was bummed that I missed those, because I always think that that's a really great category, but
yeah.
Great films this year.
I watched The Holdovers, Oppenheimer, and American Fiction all this weekend because I was very behind. I still didn't watch all of them, but all three of those were incredible.
Okay.
The Holdovers and American Fiction were my top two. They were so good. Oppenheimer was great. I love Christopher Nolan.
Amazing.
Incredible. Yeah.
You know me. If it's not a niche fly fishing video on YouTube, I probably haven't seen it, but I have seen all those ones.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a little disappointed by American Fiction personally. I was wanting more. And I felt like there were some side stories that, you know, some ways detracted from where I thought it could have gone even more.
Yeah.
But all of the Best Picture nominees, fantastic production, fantastic acting.
Yeah.
Great, you know, really some creative scripts. And maybe my expectations were too high on that one.
Could have been. Yeah. Yeah.
So
fun.
Anyways, segue.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a good time for us to answer a question that got sent in.
Oh,
just around teaching structure. So, Cheryl, you taught this past weekend.
Yeah.
The question was, how do we choose our speakers? Is that part of their job? What do you guys do the other time when you're not teaching? So maybe we can just dive in from there.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty insightful question on this person's. To be like, they have to do more.
Yeah.
So what is your more?
Yeah, I can tell my more. I mean, as far as the structure and who speaks, I mean, that's really more a question for Phil. Phil oversees our preaching and the calendar for that. He is collaborative and brings people in, and we have had some great collaborative meetings under Phil's leadership around preaching series and where those are going. But ultimately, he's the guy on who decides, who lands the plane on some of that collaborative work, and then who's going to preach. As far as for me, it is definitely not even in my job description.
Okay.
I mean, I stepped into it. I've had, as we've joked about, different a million different job descriptions here at Menlo, and have stepped into things because I've, you know, we've needed that, I think. So we, you know, it's been a crazy few years at Menlo, and we've cobbled together a preaching team, if you will. I was on the preaching team at my church prior to this. So here, it's kind of Phil's says, hey, taps and says, hey, would you be willing to preach? Which I love to preach. And so always that's a yes. I do most of my preaching prep is extracurricular. It's not in my 40 hours a week for sure. And I just know that that's it's not in my job description, but it is something I love to do. And so I feel like it's a bonus. And, you know, I do have the freedom, unlike if I worked at Google, I guess, you know, that I can block out a work day to do it. But the other things I'm responsible are going to show up someplace else too. So I do my best sermon writing in the mornings, as we're talking about mornings, but and my ability to think is best in the morning. So I'll block out when I am preaching, I'll block out, but I'll usually, my days off are Fridays and Saturdays, so I usually will start planning and exegeting the passage and use like a Friday morning, Saturday morning kind of time. And then I write, I speak my sermon a lot now. It's, I mean, my process has changed over the years, but so I will be recording voice notes to myself in my car, on a walk with my dog, all the things. So it's just neurotic and weird. But as far as what I do, wow, being a pastor must be easy. You just work on Sundays. I am the central leader over spiritual formation, which includes missions, our connections department, and our adult discipleship. And so, I mean, today I'm doing some staff reviews and check-ins. I worked on that this morning, and we've got a fun thing coming up called Menlo Next that I'm working on, along with the thing called Discover Menlo that Megan Cole is taking point on, but it's underneath my team. So trying to make sure those things fit together. So those are big projects and hopefully trying to help my staff succeed and grow and do what they do. And then I'm on the executive leadership team. That's my first team. So under Phil. So I have responsibilities that come under that as well.
So
there's things. I feel like it's always a hard question to answer because it's like, well, That was a great answer, though. Well, this is what I'm doing today. Because it's different almost every single day.
Yeah.
That was good. Yeah.
And I've noticed, even just on the podcast, from sitting down and doing this for I don't know how many years now, but I remember there was a point where
it's
you brought
like 2
in
2 years now.
Yeah.
Because it was March, just about 2 years ago. Yeah.
Oh, happy anniversary to us. You.
Sorry.
How you would bring in like just legal pads on legal pads of notes with like lines and scratches and this and that. So it's interesting to see how your process has changed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and dive into your message. We talked all about love and how it is hard and challenging and difficult. So why don't you summarize your message for us and we'll jump in from there.
Yeah. Basically, love is hard. I think there's, and I said this, some love is obviously we love to love. We're created to love. We're created by a God who is love. Most of love is really fun. And that's why, that's where we get life is in our relationships, whether it's friendships or marriages or kids or extended family, nieces, nephews, all the things. That's all part of love. And then there's love that I think is, can be easier to do that we should do. It's those one-time big events of caring for maybe the marginalized or folks that we can do real acts of service that are acts of love, providing meals, those kind of things. But I started the sermon with love is hard and the fact that I think it's hardest with those closest to us. And if the scripture, which Paul says, love is patient and love is kind. Those are the two hard, those are two really hard things to be, right? So the passage that I was assigned, if you will, or the concept, because there's it's in all four gospels, but was this last meal that Jesus had with his disciples, where he takes out, you know, the cup and he says, this is my blood shed for you. As an act of love, this is an act of love, and his body broken for us, an act of love. I mean, I didn't say this in the sermon, but Paul says in Romans 5, this is how God demonstrates his love for us, that while we were still sinners, he died for us. And that showing of the what we call communion or the Lord's Supper was an expression. It's a metaphor. It's a picture. It's some commentators say it's a living parable of what Jesus is going to accomplish on the cross. And in that same meal, he washes feet. And typically, we tend to preach one or the other. We don't bring the whole meal together. So as I was looking at all four gospels and thinking, well, I could just focus on washing feet, or I could just focus on the Lord's Supper. But I think as I was doing the contextual work, what really struck me was this, where I kind of took the sermon, was how these disciples leading up to that last meal had spent a lot of time debating amongst themselves who's going to be the greatest. And I was just stunned by, I know those stories, but when you read it all together in one sitting, you see the density of it. You see how often it comes up. And it's just, and that it comes up, that debate about greatness comes up in the, always in the context of Jesus talking about his death. So that's, I went down that wormhole and that's where the sermon kind of took its shape.
There's so much in there when you tackle a topic about love that we can dive into. But I thought a couple things, like even in the first 5 minutes, I already had like all of our podcasts mapped out. And I was just like, okay, like, but there's still 25 minutes left. So I'll try to condense as best as I can. But you started with saying something along the lines of love is sometimes hardest with those that are closest to us. I think we just need to give some space to that.
Totally.
So what is it about those that are closest to us that make it hardest or harder to love than maybe this person that's over there?
Well, let me say this caveat. And, you know, as a pastor who is on staff at a church and leading in the context of that church, it's really, this kind of topic is really vulnerable. Because you're going to preach on love, and even take my family out of the picture, who have seen me at my worst for sure, and good friends who have seen me at my worst, all those things, I work every day with you guys. And I'm not unaware. I mean, we get feedback here at Menlo, which I'm thankful for. I am not unaware that people have not felt loved by me. I'm not unaware that people have not felt heard by me. Now, I didn't have time, and you don't want to, in a sermon, you don't want to go down this, like, because it can sound like, oh, poor me, poor me. But that's true. And so as I'm putting the sermon together, you know, I'm thinking all the, I'm working this through, right? I'm working out what is this in my own life, not just distancing myself from the passage and the message. It has to come and get me, right? So that... with, you know, I did play with me talking more about my own struggles in this area, but with only 30 minutes. And also, you really have to be careful when you preach that you're not working your stuff out in the pulpit. But I do think anytime I preach or teach or bring some kind of content, I am always working that stuff out in my own private time with the Lord, with my friends, who my safe friends to do that with, that kind of thing. So so I think as I was processing this personally, I'm thinking, God, you know, love is hard. That you can stand. And I think because originally my first sermon was just going to be on the washing of the feet. And again, you've heard that sermon before. I've preached that sermon multiple times over a lot of years, told that, given that talk. And it can be tempting to preach that sermon the way you preach it. One, distance from it yourself. Second, what does it mean to, what's our modern day way of washing feet? So that was my first sermon I wrote. and then, you know, then I'm having, I'm sitting with it. And I think we've talked about this before. I don't, I do try to sit devotionally in the things I'm preaching. I don't do that where I don't, I do devotions different than what I'm preaching. No, because I do want to engage myself in it and not distance myself from it. So I think the people closest to us, one, to your question, Mark, why is that? One, it's just because you do life with them on the regular. And we're all dealing with stuff, and there's still stuff that we haven't arrived at. We're on a journey with Jesus and his transforming work in our life. And so I know I had a mentor. I mean, years ago, I was stepping into a higher leadership role at the church that I was in Austin. And so I asked this, he was one of our elders, but also a mentor, and I really trusted him. I asked him if he would meet with, kind of do a 360 review of me with this team, and that I was going to be now taking leadership of. Now, we had worked together. I had been a member of the team, and now I was stepping into the leadership role of the team. And so he met with each of them, and then he met with me. And I so appreciated this. He, you know, he brought the weaknesses. You know, he asked them, what are my weaknesses? And they weren't things I was unaware of, you know. I mean, I've had things where I'm like, oh, you know, that's shocking. I needed somebody to call that out in me. Typically, it's like, yeah, I kind of know that. Or I didn't know to what extent. And, but he said to me, he said, Cheryl, this team, they're excited to work with you. They've already worked with me, but have you be the leader. And your strengths, here's your strengths. You know, he talked about the strengths that they saw and the strengths that I brought. And he said, you know, Cheryl, because your strengths, it are, the weaknesses that are showing up in you are very typical of somebody with these strengths. It's not an excuse. It's not a don't try to grow or change or, you know, become different. But those are going to be, those are going to be pain points for you. And let's, you know, one, freedom to know you're going to have weaknesses. I want to show up. I wanted, you know, I knew it wasn't going to happen, but in my head, I'm hoping that I'm going to get this, you know, this 360 back, and he's going to be like, whoa, Cheryl, I have never seen a leader like this. You are, they consider you amazing at everything.
That's funny.
So, you know, so I think that's where love is hard, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. it with those closest to us, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. if you're going to be close to people, mm-hmm. and if you're going to work in proximity or live in proximity to a spouse or to a friend or a roommate or family members, you're going to show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yep.
And you're going to show up on your worst day. Mm-hmm. I was at this retreat, which I quoted this yeah. Trevor, you know, at this Trevor Hudson retreat. I could have like just want, I could have just been like, let's just have Trevor come give this talk. But he said something, you know, he said something at the retreat that he said, you know, everyone you meet, everyone you talk to is sitting next to their own pool of tears. And so that was super helpful.
Yeah. Wow.
Because I think yeah. that's one of the reasons too, is that like I could go into like say a pastoral appointment with somebody I don't know very well, and I can go with that, mm-hmm. carrying that with me. Mm-hmm. Hey, this person has their stuff. This person is sitting, but to slow down in the everyday, in the people you're up close to, next to stop and remind yourself of that. Mm-hmm. I'm not that great at that. And I need to get better at that. I need to get better at slowing down to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But I think that's where, why in a lot of ways
yeah.
that we just, you know, we step into conversations and relationships with people outside our normal mode mm-hmm. Not always, but sometimes with more intentionality.
Yeah.
But when you just, this people see and you see you and you're going mm-hmm. and you're doing and you're doing your things and you're doing your tasks or you're at home and you're, you know, doing your deals. And then you also just, we just bring all of our wounds, right? Mm-hmm. And so you say something to me that you didn't mean as mm-hmm. hurtful or mm-hmm. anything, but I got a wound in that space that you sure. don't even know about.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's true for, I know enough married, most of my friends are married people who've been married for a long time. You know, it's not like just because you're married mm-hmm. Or just because you're a parent, child, or whatever, mm-hmm. that you actually know the depth of a person's wounds. Mm. Now, that's where sometimes therapy it comes out or whatever. But mm-hmm. even then, we're wonderful. I can go to therapy and hide myself.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Definitely.
So.
Yeah.
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 So yeah. I don't know if that answers, but
that's great.
But yeah, I don't think, you know, I mean, obviously we are sinful people. Mm-hmm. We are in process of being transformed into the likeness of Jesus. Mm-hmm. That process is much slower than we'd like it to be.
Yeah.
And I think what's hard is I can be patient with myself, but I want you to change a lot quicker. And that's why when Paul says mm-hmm. love is patient, I don't think he means it's just patient in I'll wait for you to vacuum or something, you know. I'll wait for you. No, I'll be patient with your transformation mm-hmm. as well. So
yeah. And I think that as you were talking about mm-hmm. being able to hide ourselves, the more mm-hmm. that we're around people, the mm-hmm. less we can hide ourselves.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Yep.
And so when you later use that scripture, that love keeps no records of wrongs, when we were hosting online, people really were like, that's powerful. Like, that's a powerful piece of scripture. Mm-hmm. And maybe if you could speak to the intersection of how forgiveness matches up with that. Where's mm-hmm. there an intersection between us being ourselves, mm-hmm. knowing that, you know, we are broken people,
yep.
bringing that with us, especially yep. to those that we spend the most time with.
Yep.
And how love keeping no records and wrongs can intersect with forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think that that means that if you've been, you know, I mean, this is so nuanced, and that's why, mm-hmm. again, mm-hmm. I always believe in personal evangelism, personal discipleship, personal pastoral care across the table. That is what I don't love about preaching, is that you can't preach everything to its fullest depth. Mm. Because yep. in a room
yep.
and at Menlo Church, when you know, that could be a whole sermon in itself, keep no record of wrong, because in a space, let's say I'm preaching in that space to about 2,000 people, I don't know how many it is, but statistics would tell you, I mean, like 1 in 5 have been sexually abused, male and female. I don't know what the stat is on domestic abuse. Again, hurts and wounds that are really by there. It is, you are truly a victim, to a traumatic abuse. And there was a victimizer, you know. I think we can sometimes the reason that victims of traumatic abuse aren't met where they are is that we tend to be a very offendable people. So the littlest thing can offend us even more and more, I think, with social media and those things. Sure. People ghost people. Who even did that, right? I've been reading, read a ton of stuff and on culture and those things. I mean, adolescents and young adults don't even know how to deal with conflict because you just send a text. You don't sit down and have a conversation face to face. So there are these worlds, right? And to say that you being impatient with me at work and cutting me off when I was trying to share something with you is the same. And you wouldn't say this, but sometimes we can get in a space where, like, okay, you're not a great listener at work. I'm not a great listener at work, whatever it is. It's not even in the same range or category of victimization. And so keeping account of wrongs in that space of being truly traumatized and victimized is a different conversation, a different journey. I don't find that Christians typically tell somebody who's been traumatically abused to, well, just forgive them. Like, that can happen for sure. It's sometimes the person who's been victimized thinks they have to get to that spot.
Right.
And they think they have to be there quickly and or whatever. I just think that's a bigger conversation, Mark, that I think if you have been traumatized in that way, if you've been sexually abused, if you've been raped, if you have been a victim of domestic violence, if you have been emotionally abused, and there is emotional abuse, you've been in a narcissistic relationship, and let's be careful, not everybody's a narcissist. Everybody's a narcissist. But truly, there are manipulative relationships that are truly abusive. That just requires a whole different level of conversation that we don't have time for. Yeah, but
absolutely. Yeah. And the beauty of studying scripture like this is there's hope at the end of everything. And so I thought that it was interesting you communicated that communion is a promise. It's a promise of Jesus's fulfillment with who he said that he was and how to live and love accordingly. And so I don't know if I've ever, like how you said before, heard a communion message and a foot washing message like in the same thing, because they're so easily parsed out. So you used a line as well that I wanted to give a little bit more space to, which was during during the explanation of foot washing, you said that sometimes the greater the title comes, the greater the towel. I thought that was really interesting.
He gave me that line. That's a Phil Eubank. So I can't even take credit for that.
Hate to toot his horn.
Yeah, but. No, we, okay. We can toot.
Okay, how did you get to there? And why'd you choose to include that?
Phil sent it to me, and I mean, he knew my passage, and I don't even remember when in the process he just sent that to me, and I thought it was, I thought it was good too. Originally, I had more around it that I just didn't have time to unpack, but I think also we are in a, Menlo Church culturally, our place in the world. We are in an area of the country that has people, we have people in our church with some really big titles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will say this, though, as I say it. The people I have met at Menlo who have some incredibly big titles and have done some incredibly big things, mm-hmm. they tend, my experience of all of them, and I'm not going to name names because then I'd be dropping names, but they've all been probably some of the most humble people I've ever met.
Mm.
So I have not experienced at Menlo that somebody mm-hmm. with a big title needed that, but I don't know everybody at Menlo. But anyway, I just thought it was a good little phrase, so I threw it in there.
It's great. But, yeah.
Yeah.
What's the significance about, like, if I'm talking to my neighbor about this, who doesn't know this story, maybe they've heard the communion piece of it, maybe mm-hmm. they've heard it about washing feet.
Mm-hmm.
What's so important about Jesus washing these mm-hmm. people's feet?
Well, one place I didn't go that many of my friends were asking me was mm-hmm. the Super Bowl ad.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Did you, and apparently, that just blew up with all kinds of, you know, Christians hating on Christians for creating Super Bowl ads that, you know, like, a number of friends, when they knew I'd, you know, kind of put it out there to my prayer mm-hmm. people and stuff, hey, I'm preaching on this. And it, again, at first I was going to focus just on the foot washing.
Mm-hmm.
And so multiple people asked me if I was going to talk about the Super Bowl ad. Mm-hmm. And so then I went down, I saw the Super Bowl ad, but I didn't go down the wormhole. I hadn't gone down the wormhole. And oh my gosh, Christians, stop yourself. So the significance of foot washing, don't ever think it. And I thought the Super Bowl ad, personally, I thought it was a beautiful picture of, you know, that this is who Jesus is. He washed feet. Now, if you're not a Christian and don't have a context for that, is that a little weird? Because I did see the day after, like, somebody I follow who's not a Christian, you know, said something like, that's just weird or whatever. Which is fine.
Sure. Yeah.
It was weird. It's weird. Because guess what? It is weird.
It is weird.
Yeah.
It is weird.
Yeah.
But the point, obviously, is that we have a God who steps into your space and my space and is willing to serve us in a very, very practical, messy way that would have been like foot washing, right? Like that is person of lowest status would have done that.
Mm-hmm.
So again, there's a whole sermon you could do on, so what's our modern day equivalent of that? But I just want to say this to some Christians out there. If there's this great moment in the Gospels when, and it happens after the debate about greatness, and then Jesus does the teaching. James and John at one point come back and go, "Hey, Jesus!" They just had this debate about greatness. Then Jesus tells them about the child and not lording it over, whatever. And they're like, "Hey, Jesus, these guys are calling upon, you know, doing something in your name. Like, do you want us to throw fire down on them?"
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus says this beautiful line: "If they aren't against us, they're for us." Like, I'm not gonna go after everybody who's doing it, maybe not in the way that I would have you do it. I'm not gonna go after every misstep. And I mean, and again, social media hasn't helped this, but like, it's just like, it's like Christians are spending so much time looking for other Christians to mess up or to somebody to do something like James and John are doing, like, in the name, they're doing this in your name, Jesus, and they're not even followers of yours. Do you want us to throw fire on them? No, I don't. I don't. What would it look like? If we just started being gracious to each other, mm-hmm. like not looking. I just think Christians, you know, it's like, this is what's wrong with the church. It's really easy to be the critic. You know, what's the famous poem about, you know, it's easy to be the, Brené Brown likes to quote it, mm-hmm. and other, you know, to be the, it's a, who said, anyway, it doesn't matter. But yeah, to be the critic in the middle of the thing. And mm-hmm. and I'm a J on the Myers-Briggs. I am good at being critical. I can see what's wrong, all the things. But God, I hope as I get older and as I am getting, I mean, it's just, to be the fan, to be the encourager, to, you know, anyway, so that's a tangent.
That's great.
But yeah, I think foot washing is, how do you love somebody? How do you serve somebody? And guess what? Mm-hmm. Critiquing everything they do isn't loving them.
Yeah.
So maybe that's your modern day foot washing.
I think about, like, you know, they're either barefoot or wearing sandals, and there's no paved roads, so their feet are gross.
Totally.
And this is probably TMI,
but
gross. Like, in the summer when I wear flip-flops a lot, my feet can get gross. And I think about just anybody washing my feet. Like, when I get my, when I get, like, a pedicure, I will wash my feet first because I don't want them to have to do that because I think it's disgusting, nice of you. Even though... they're used to that probably, but I like, you know, you talk about this a lot on with staff too, of like, put yourself in the scene, put yourself in that position. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I'm like, oh my gosh, my feet are so gross. Like, I would not want my savior.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody touching my feet. But most of all, I don't want, excuse me, my savior who came for me to then wash my feet. That, yeah. It's
Which
all.
Was Peter's response. Have you ever been to a Maundy Thursday foot washing ceremony? Or been a part
I
of
have,
a foot washing
no.
ceremony?
We used to do something similar at Menlo Park.
Sounds intimidating to me. Is it?
No, I used to go to on, but the church I was at before didn't do a Maundy Thursday. Well, I don't think I've ever been to a church that did a Maundy Thursday. So I would go to, there's a wonderful St. John's, I think it's Episcopal, in South Pass, Pasadena. Thank you to all that staff there. I love them. I don't even know them. I don't know their names. I always just go on Maundy Thursday, and I would go Good Friday, and then sometimes I'd go on Holy Saturday. And one, because it's nice to, when you work for a church, it's nice to step into another context and not be at the church that you are working for, to have that experience. There is something profound about having somebody wash your feet. And I don't know. It's just, I can't even describe it. You just have to do it. I would say, if you have an opportunity to go to a church that does a Maundy Thursday foot washing, because it's stepping into this posture of humility. I think there's a humility of receiving the foot washing that is, you know, which is what Peter was like, Jesus, like, if you don't let me wash your feet. And I think we can be like that too, right? Like, I'm not, oh no, Jesus, I'm not going to let you do this. And, And then I've done it with volunteer teams and retreat teams before in the past. And, there's something really holy about it. I think you can turn it into, well, now I did the, you know, obviously it's two things, but there's something that's beautiful about that, because I do think it's more the humility of receiving the foot washing than actually doing the foot washing.
That's good. Well, what else, Cheryl? What else would you have included if you had some more time?
Oh, gosh. I wish that we'd had more time to just sit and contemplate. I thought we were going to have more time. I misread my timing of the sermon as far as just being able to sit in that, especially that I would have liked to have more time to reflect on just asking the Lord, who do you want me to love this week? And allowing the Lord to speak that to people. And then that last meditation of sitting and gazing upon Jesus, gazing upon me in love. That's been a really profound exercise for me the past 4 to 6 weeks. And even like this morning when I got up very early, I've been really trying to force myself, don't just go into task mode, because I was ready to go. And I'll say, I just couldn't even connect this morning. And that's okay. But it is it's been profound for me to sit and really connect with Jesus loving me and adoring me. I think, again, for many, for myself, I'm such a performer and I want to get it right and I want to, you know, so I can come to the Lord so much more often with, what do you want to change in me? And I have, again, I have not loved as well as I want to love. And I've gotten a lot of feedback in the last 4 years. And so I can tend to go to the Lord with so much like, Lord, please help me, change me, change me, change me, change me. Or, you know, what do you want me to do for you? What am I need to do? And so to sit with him and have him, to experience him loving me again, I've been doing it now for 4 to 6 weeks, not connected every time I do it, but I think it's starting to creep into me. So I would have loved for us to have way more time for that and to really receive the Lord's love for us. I think, again, we're in a part of the country for sure. I think this is true in every city I've lived in, LA, Austin, high-performing people, very, you know, mm-hmm. once they're in with mm-hmm. Jesus, and they want to know. But so the temptation is to move to what do I need to do for God and not mm-hmm. what is it to just receive mm-hmm. from him. So I would have liked to have spent more time on that.
That's great. I thought it was awesome how you shouted out our devotional and how there's over 4,500 people yeah. that have signed up so far. And I just want to encourage those that might not have started. It's not too late.
Nope. No.
Jump right in. We're still journeying together towards Easter. Yep. And there is plenty of time for reflection. And even if you just do a week of it or a day of it, mm-hmm. it's so valuable. Mm-hmm. And we hope that it can build a habit that outlasts just Easter.
Yeah.
So this could be something that you build in. So thanks for all your work with that, Cheryl, because yeah. they've been awesome. We've gotten some really great feedback on them. Yeah, and thanks. People have been sharing those around too with coworkers and life groups and friends. And so just thank you.
Yeah. No, that's, and it's been fun to hear people. Cause I, you know, I'm on the Menlo Church one. So it's, there's a group of us over there and I love the people. Thank you, Kathy Connell. You give a shout out to Kathy. Ooh. She comments a lot on it and stuff. That's helpful. Encourages me. Jessica has commented some on it, but I know people are doing it in other spaces and, and, life groups and those kind of things too. So that's fun to hear. And some people, even in the courtyard at Menlo Park this morning, we're chatting with me about it and how it's encouraged them. So
yeah,
I love that.
Great.
Yeah.
Jess, anything to look forward to or people things that people should know about in the coming weeks?
Definitely. Well, like you tapped a little bit on, we've got Good Friday coming up.
Yep.
March 29th. Yep. That'll be at 7 p.m. at Mountain View. We're having one service. So if you normally would come to the Menlo Park one, we really want to encourage you to make it down to Mountain View for that. We will be live streaming, but we will put in the caveat of like, this is a really powerful experience that we recommend you try to come in person.
Yes.
Mark shared a couple weeks ago how once he started doing the Good Friday service, it really helped set the tone for the entire weekend. And I will completely double down on that. And I'm sure you would as well.
Yes, absolutely.
So definitely try to make that. And then we have Easter is at every campus. Our normal service times, 8:30, 10, and 11:30. Mm-hmm. We've got activities for kids to do. Every campus will have an Easter egg hunt after their 11:30 service. I think some sort of special food or food truck will be available as well. Mm-hmm. So definitely make sure you come to our campus and check that out.
Definitely. Cheryl, anything from your end that you'd like to shout out?
No, I think that's let's keep our focus on Easter. And then there's some fun things happening after that that I am excited about. I gave a little drop on the Discover Menlo stuff and Menlo Next, which is a new thing. Yep. But we'll let that unfold as it is. I don't want to get too far in the weeds on that one.
Great. Cool. Shout out to our kids ministry who had a PJ party this last Sunday, which was awesome. So tons of fun there. Great work to everyone. Thank you all who have said yes to helping out make that ministry what it is, whether you're on staff or volunteer. It's just amazing to see the life change in the next generation. So thanks so much, everyone. If you need anything, you can text our team at 650-600-0402. Have a great week, everybody. And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
See ya.